So here we are, week four already. This January is just zipped right by, huh? And we're going to continue on, as I said, with the meta instructions, but I want to sort of go a little further afield at the same time and talk about a few other things that are related to meta. But first of all, I want to talk about how to choose a dear friend. Remember, each of these categories is just a placeholder, in a sense. You choose a particular person to be the person that you work with meta. So you have someone that is a dear friend implies someone who you're close to, who you like a lot. But there's a few things we have to be careful about here. But first, here's one thing you want to watch. Traditionally, it's best if the person is alive. It's easier to relate to people, think of what these phrases mean for the person if they're actually alive. With the benefactor, that's sometimes a bit more difficult, but with the dear friend, you should be able to pick someone who's actually, you know. They may maybe haven't seen them in a while, but they're that person that, you know, you can always phone them up and they'll listen to you, sort of thing. Traditionally, it was taught that you should not choose someone of the opposite sex. Too complicated. Well, of course, we all understand that that's the world is a lot more complicated than that. And so now what I always say is don't choose someone who you are attracted to, whatever that means, you know, to you. And that's because, and the reason that's one of the suggestions is those things quickly become too complicated emotionally. And we want to make this practice simple. So this is a friend who you feel really connected with. You feel have warm feelings toward, but not someone who you're in a relationship with or would like to have be in a relationship with, for that matter. You have to be able to actually visualize this person and be able to see them in your mind, however that works for you. And here's another thought. For some people, their best friend is their dog or their cat. This would be a perfectly valid dear friend. Remember that what we're doing here is we're trying to find someone where we feel that connection is easy. And this is for all beings and not just human beings. This meta is for all beings everywhere, as it says in the sutta. So it doesn't matter whether this is a human being or an animal being. You know, you're not doing it to reach them. This is now with the dear friend, we get into another layer of complication. And that's that often when we choose a dear friend, if we're not careful, we get caught in what's called the near enemy of metta. And the near enemy is a mental formation, a mind state that seems like metta, but actually isn't. I mean, all of the Brahma Viharas have near enemies and far enemies. The near enemy of metta is craving. I'll think of you as my dear friend, but I expect something in return, which is how we often get caught in relationship with people. You know, there's the expectation of getting something back. I'll be your dear friend, but boy, you should really tune into this and then know that I'm being this so wonderful, how wonderful I'm being towards you. Or you might even want to tell the person, you know, they've chosen as your dear friend in your meta practice. Don't go there. Absolutely don't go there. You can't want anything. You know, we know that craving is the, you know, from the second noble truth is the cause of suffering. You know, This, you'll turn metta into just another way to create more suffering for yourself. Not skillful. So you want to choose someone who you feel comfortable, who you feel connected to, but where there is not that I want something energy at all. That's why the not choosing someone who to whom you're attracted in a sexual way or a sensual way is so important, because there's always that I want something energy there as well. And we want to try and avoid going there completely. Okay. Now, there is, like I said, for each of the Brahma Viharas, there's a near enemy and a far enemy. The far enemy of metta, of loving kindness, of what's called sometimes called goodwill, is ill will. You know, that thought of like you wish this person unhappiness. You know, the opposite of what you want to be doing, right? But with a dear friend, think of you probably have someone in your mind now, right? And think about that person and realize that, you know, probably at one time or another over the course of your friendship, they've done something that really bugged you, really annoyed you. That's the memory that's going to come as you're practicing. Just watch. That's what will arise. And you get caught in that story about, oh, and then they did this, and I wish they hadn't done that. And it was, how could they be so mean? I'm their best friend, blah, 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 blah. There's that story going to arise, guaranteed. So understand that that's also the potential. Remember that each of these categories, as we add a new category, things get more complicated. Things get, the relationship energy shifts. You know, with self, though, that can be quite complicated because we have a low self-esteem. It's pretty easy to wish ourselves happiness. And with the benefactor, the same thing, because we look up to this person, because we really appreciate this person, it's pretty good to have a thoughts of love and kindness towards them. But now we've shifted to a person who's more like just our equal. We're not looking up to them. We're just someone we hang with, you know, someone we spend time with, someone we feel comfortable just being with. It's a different sort of relationship and has that potential to shift that energy from smiley happiness to, oh yeah, but that time that they, you know, did that weird thing and it really annoyed me, and you know, that's where the mind goes if we're not careful. So just be aware that the far enemy of metta, this is where it might start to arise. And be aware that if that happens, just note it for what it is. And this, you know, when you, because that story will start to spin. And then you just step back. It's even if that sort of story starts to spin, it's quite skillful to step back. Don't abandon this person. Oh no, that one didn't work. You know, because all our friends have that energy with them. But step back, drop into the body. This is, oh, now we're practicing mindfulness. Here we go. Drop into the body, tune into, you know, the energy of that story, and then start doing metta for that person instead. Just shift the energy. Shift the energy back to one of metta. Turn off the story. Shift the mind by wishing that person well. Visualizing them, remembering, you know. So when you start off practicing with a dear friend, one thing that's also very skillful is if you can think of a couple of things that make them that special person. What is it that makes them your dear friend, as opposed to just someone you know, an acquaintance? You know, what is it that moves them into that status of dear friend? You know, and there might be, you know, some particular activity you do together. And this is one of your hiking buddy, and you always go hiking in the mountains together, and it's just so great, and we hang out and blah, 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 or whatever, you know, someone you always go and have coffee with, or doesn't make any difference. And you can sort of imagine and remember those good times. at the start of your practice with a dear friend, like spend 30 seconds or so just sort of contemplating why it was you chose this person in the first place. And maybe you go back and actually have a few sweet memories about this person that helped you connect to them. And then, like in all cases, you have to make sure that you have a sense for what these phrases will mean for them. This is your dear friend. You know them pretty well, but there might be differences in what they mean for you and for them because you're different people. You have different backgrounds, you have different histories, you have different lives. So there might be some subtle and not so subtle differences in what it means to be safe or happy or healthy or at ease for you than for them. Just like with the benefactor. Now we're starting to diverge a little further away from just one way of relating. You know, this dear friend could be several different people you might choose. Which gets me to one last thing. Don't feel bad. Oh, I chose so-and-so, which means I had to leave out those other people. And that's not nice of me to leave them out. Just don't go there. Because it's not about them. It's about you changing your habitual patterns of mind. I repeat this over and over again because it's so important with metta. This is what you changing your habitual mind states of ill will into ones of only having thoughts of goodwill. So if this person is easy and you feel connected and it's kind of a sweet relationship, that's the person. But it doesn't mean that all those other people aren't worthy of you wishing them ill will, goodwill. It's just not going to happen while you're practicing metta right now. And once again, you want to pick a person, just like with the benefactor, pick a person and stick with them for a long time. What's a long time? Well, you can figure that out, but it's not like a week. It's like, maybe it's a year. Yeah. But then friendships shift, you know, and some people move away and things happen. And, you know, maybe eventually you change to have a different dear friend. But it's not like every week I'll try someone new. So I make sure I cover everybody, which is how your mind wants to go sometimes. Okay. I want to read a couple of things here. This is from the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada is a collection of poetic, almost aphoristic at times, sayings, teachings of the Buddha. They're very brief. They're not even a sutta. They're like a sentence or two sometimes, as this is. This is right at the very beginning of the Dhammapada, the first two verses of the Dhammapada. Talking about metta in a very interesting way, I think. This is a more recent translation, recent being in the last 20 years or so. So if the language, if you know the Dhammapada and the language seems a bit different, don't worry about it. This is just how this is translated by, I forget who it was. This was translated by Bhikkhu. Yathanasaro Bhikkhu, one of the main translators in the tradition. Phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. If you speak or act with a corrupted heart, then suffering follows you as the wheel of the cart, the track of the ox that pulled it. Phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. If you act or speak with a calm, bright heart, then happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves. This is, he's talking very directly about that you want to have this calm, bright heart, which is where metta is leading us to having a calm, bright heart. So that's one thing. The other thing is, this is from Loving Kindness, from Sharon Salzberg. And she's talking about aversion, which is interesting. She says, a book on loving kindness, because aversion is the mind state we often get caught in. Yeah. Aversion being having that broad sense of anger, fear, ill will, and the broadest sense to just plain old irritation has a broad area. Okay. There's confusion in contemporary society about how to relate to feelings of aversion. For example, it is difficult to understand the difference between feeling anger and venting anger. When we undertake a spiritual practice, it is important that we open to all that arises, that we recognize, acknowledge, and accept everything we feel. Like what I was talking about with the near enemy arising, and the far enemy for that matter. We have a long conditioning of self-deception, of keeping certain things outside the sphere of our awareness, of repressing them. Overcoming our denial and repression and opening to states of aversion can be very healing, but in the process, we may pay the price of becoming lost in anger if, through misunderstanding, we indulge it. Most contemporary psychological research shows that when one expresses anger quite often in one's life, it leads to the easy expression of anger. Expressing anger becomes a habit. Many people assume that we have a certain amount of anger inside, and if we do not want to keep it inside, we have to put it outside somehow. If it is outside, it's not going to be inside anymore. There's whole schools of therapy that believe in this. In reality, it is merely a conditioned response that arises and passes away. It is crucial for us to see that when we identify with these passing states as being solid and who we truly are, creation of self, in other words, we let them rule us and we are compelled to act in ways that cause harm to ourselves and others. Our opening needs to rest on the basis of non-identification, recognizing anger or aversion in the mind as transitory is very different from identifying with them as being who we really are and then acting on them. I think it's really important. What she's saying here is it's okay, perfectly normal to experience these mind states. It's only when we believe them, when we solidify around them and then act out from them, that's when the pain and suffering arises. In and of themselves, they're just normal human reactions to what's arising in the world. We're human beings, and sure enough, we're going to have aversive mind states sometimes. What a surprise. You know? And what we're trying to do is learn through metta to have them less and less, to have a mind that is less, has less tendency to go towards these aversive mind states and instead go towards thoughts of loving kindness in all situations. Okay. So there's a couple other things I want to mention here before we practice. One is what I'll call the right attitude when saying the phrases. And this is common. You hear this description in all meditative practices. So this isn't unique to metta. But it's so, and the question is simply not too tight and not too loose. In other words, we don't want to be saying the phrases and sort of drift in and out. No, I sort of got part of that phrase. That's okay. And oh, I skipped one, but that's okay. You know, it's like we can't be too loose because then there's not, the concentration isn't there. It isn't being, we have to be precise. And actually, if we start to lose our connection, then it's really skillful to step back, remember why we're practicing, you know, for whatever person we're practicing for, see if we can increase the visualization of that person, you know, tune into the meaning of the phrases again, whatever we can to sort of juice us back into the practice if we're too loose.
But it's also too tight.
Too tight is, you know, like sort of gritting your teeth and going, oh, I'm going to get all these phrases right every time. I'm never going to fail. I'm going to be perfect. And then when you're not perfect, you get upset with yourself. You're sort of like forcing yourself to get every word dead on exactly in flow. And it's in this perfect rhythm. You know, people get into trying to make a rhythm out of this. But your mind is not rhythmic. Your mind is like all over the place all the time. So even as you repeat the phrases, sometimes they'll go a bit slower, sometimes they'll go a bit faster, sometimes there'll be some sort of little pause or stutter in the middle of a phrase. It's all right. Not too tight, but not too loose. Okay. And then the other thing I want to mention is, and this is something I found myself, this isn't part of what I'll call the traditional instructions, but I found it's really quite helpful for me. And that is, I personally have difficulty visualizing myself. So when I'm doing metta for self, to try and visualize myself, because you don't actually see yourself a lot, unless you're looking in the mirror a lot, you don't actually ever see yourself. So it's kind of, you're not in the habit of seeing yourself in that way. So what I found, and this was a while ago as I was practicing, I started shifted this way. And for me, this works. And for some people I've told, this is great. For other people, it's like, no, the visualization's great. I'll stick with that. But the idea is there is in the Satipatthana Sutta, in the refrain, there's this phrase that keeps coming up over and over and over again. This idea that we want to just be aware there is a body. And so when I'm practicing metta for self, I'm just tuning into my body sensations, but in a very broad sort of, there is this, not any particular thing. I'm not tuning into the, you know, the funny feeling in my foot or anything like that. There's this conglomeration of sense input that put all together in my mind tells me there is a body. Notice not there is my body or I have a body. It's just there is a body. Very important that we don't start identifying in that way. But just there is a body gives me a place where I'm not actually visualizing myself as I'm saying the phrases, so much as experiencing myself. Can't do this with other people. Can't do this with any of the other categories. But with self, it works very well for me. So if you want to play with this, experiment with it, see what happens. It's sort of, this is where, you know, people think metta and mindfulness are sort of like two totally separate practices, and they are and distinct in many, many ways. But there is places like this where they start even at the beginning level, start to blend together a little bit. I'm not saying this is necessary. I'm certainly not saying this is traditional. It certainly was nothing that was ever taught to me as this is the correct way to do it, but it works for me. So I'm sharing this idea with you, and you can play with it if it seems suitable. And if it doesn't seem suitable, just let it go. It's just it's a suggestion. Okay. So that's all the instruction for tonight. So before I go any further and we actually start to sit, I want to leave a little bit of time right now for in case anybody has any questions, because once again, I've given you a lot of information. If you have any questions about anything, about the practice in general, about practicing with a dear friend, about how to pick a dear friend, any of that stuff, now's the time to ask. before we actually start to practice. And if not, we'll just roll right on. But just turn on your mic and ask a question if you want to. We'll have time later for more general discussion and comments, but this is, if you have specific questions about the practice that haven't been answered, this would be a good time to slip it in. Okay. So what we're going to do, once again, we're going to sit for about half an hour with this next category added in. So like we did last week, we'll start just by practicing for self for 7 or 8 minutes. Then we'll switch, and I'll lead you through that switch to meditating for the benefactor. And then once again, after 7 or 8 minutes, we'll switch one more time and we'll then start dear friend. So have right now, have this clear idea in your mind about who you're going to choose for dear friend. So when we get to that point, you have to go, oh, well, who am I going to use? Have some, you've probably all got a pretty clear idea already because I've been talking about it for a long enough time that you probably, oh yeah, I know. So have this in your mind, the idea of who your dear friend person is going to be. And then we'll just sit for half an hour and see what happens. So find that, as always, that comfortable upright position. Get a very clear sense of self, whether the image or if you're playing with this idea of there is a body, a sense of just this whole body sensation. All that mass of different sensations, we put them all together and somehow we come up with the conclusion there is a body. And then just start repeating the phrases for self. Like I said, 7 or 8 minutes, switch the benefactor, 7 or 8 minutes again, and then we'll 15 minutes or so with dear friend. So always start with the phrases for self. You might be using different phrases at this point. That's okay. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And then just continue on at your own pace. I just want to finish then by reading this really wonderful short poem by Hafiz. And it's talking about that whole idea of with metta, we don't want it to fall into the near enemy, the craving, the wanting something. And this is like 30 words poem. This guy's called The Sun Never Says. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. That's metta. That's what he's describing. It lights the whole sky. You know, in the Metta Sutta, they talk about metta being boundless, without limit, immeasurable. And then I'd like to just do a brief dedication of merit. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and awakening of all beings everywhere. Yeah.